Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, looking at what happens when we die, we looked at... Probate and all the three, well, I guess, is there only three evils
well,
in probate?
Well, that's kind of like a terminology that we talked about last show, which you can find at legacyandfaith.com.
But we are looking at how to design a plan that avoids probate. It can be done.
Yeah, there's several different ways. And so we've been talking about, well, what happens when I die in this series? And we've talked about needing a good plan. What happens if you don't have a plan? What happens with unique assets? And last week's show, we talked about what happens if we have to go through probate. How do we get to probate? Why would we have to go through that system? And so that's last week's discussion. And this week, we're going to talk about, well, what if I don't want to go through probate? And I'm an advocate of, well, why go through it if we don't have to? There's different ways that we can create a plan. There's not just one way. There's actually a couple different ways that we can create plans to avoid the probate process. And most individuals would want to avoid probate. As a matter of fact, if I do a public seminar and I ask how many people want to avoid probate, almost every hand goes up. So it is internally a core belief, even though some people wouldn't know why they want to avoid probate. They just know they do. They've just heard all of these bad stories. Mm-hmm. Well, if I go through probate, that's bad. Okay. And again, that was kind of last week's show. Well, yeah, there is a cost, but in Washington, not as much. It's an open probate system.
What's the worst state? Do you know?
Oh, gosh. California, New York, Florida. And the reason is because they have a really high cost to go through probate process. Matter of fact, in California, a lot of people just use a cheap templated trust, try to get their assets in it just to avoid the probate. They're really not doing good planning. Mm. They're just trying to avoid the probate process. So there are some states with hefty fees. And so that cost is a truism, but it's not as much here in Washington. We just open up a case, so the cost in Washington is reasonably mitigated, but it is an open forum, so it's public, and it, in my experience, it does take quite some time. I can typically close non-probated estates faster. So let's talk about ways to avoid probate, because if I can close those faster, most people would say that's a good thing. Now, there's always stories, whether you use probate, whether you use a will, whether you use a trust. I can't control others. I can't control financial institutions, but typically I am more confident using a trust instrument to close an estate than I am going through the probate system. So let's talk about a couple different ways to avoid it. I mentioned one right there, which is a revocable living trust. So if you're newer to the show, what is a revocable living trust? A revocable living trust is a holding container. An attorney can assist you creating the trust instrument. Then, in theory, we want all of your assets to be placed within the trust. What does that mean? So instead of Paul and Mariana Grant owning a bank account, my wife and I would own a bank account in the Grant Trust, as an example. So we retitle or shift who owns the account or the house or the property or the businesses, the life insurance policies and everything else that we have to the trust. Now, there's a couple things we do not change. Number one, the most important one is we do not change title on any retirement funds. Okay, so that's very important because the IRS does not recognize a trust as the individual earner for an IRA. Now, I use IRA in a general terminology, meaning retirement account. That could be a traditional individual retirement account. It could be a 401k, a 453b. It could be a Roth IRA. It could be a SEP program. So all of these different retirement programs, I use a general term of an IRA, okay, meaning a general account that is tax deferred or a Roth IRA. So we do not put or retitle those, okay? So those must stay in the earner's name because IRS doesn't recognize a trust. Therefore, if I ever put one in a trust immediately, it would be taxable. That would be a bad day. Mm. That would be a bad day for my client. It'd probably be a really bad day for me because I'm probably getting sued. So we don't touch IRAs, the titling of them. Now, some attorneys, when a trust is properly designed, that is a big, 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 big deal. And anytime I talk about IRAs on this show, I am always saying, please talk to your attorney. Please talk to your attorney. Please talk to your attorney. Because if you say it three times in a row, that's very important. It's kind of like Jesus saying something multiple times. So therefore, when dealing with a retirement account and your estate plan, who do you talk to? Your attorney, not your financial advisor, your attorney. There are specific laws that can be written into trust, certain language that make it okay for an IRA to come to a trust. But if it's not there, then it's going to be, then your trust is going to be treated like an estate and the IRA is going to unwind faster to your beneficiary. So there'd be a higher tax on that theoretically. So therefore, IRAs are very, very complicated. And in this educational show, my biggest deal is please talk to your attorney when you are trying to align your IRA to your estate plan. Please get legal advice with that one. It's very, very important. But we do not take any type of an IRA and change the title to a trust. We never do that. Okay. Again, that would be an immediate taxation. Mm. That would be bad. So sometimes we move it to a trust at death, but that is an attorney choice and they would know how they wrote the document and be able to guide you specifically. So again, please talk to your attorney. I know I've said it like a dozen times now. So hopefully when you're listening to this, you got the point. So in a trust, we're trying to move all of our assets, except an IRA, to the name of the trust because that then puts the assets in submission to the document. Okay, so we spend time, spend energy, we spend money on an attorney to actually write up a trust document, and we want every asset to be beholden to that document because that's where all the instructions are. So we don't want bank accounts in your name. We actually want them in the name of the trust. I'm not quite sure why attorneys, some attorneys are reticent in putting in a checking account into a trust. I've never quite understood that thought process. With my firm, we want to move as much as possible there. So therefore, a trust then is a holding container. And because it is theoretically a contract, then when someone passes away, the contract does not end. Therefore, when all of your assets are in a trust, the trust instructions are still attached to the asset. Therefore, someone doesn't die with an asset in their name. Again, except for an IRA and that I am going to assume your attorney is going to help get it aligned properly so that it actually operates in concert with your estate plan and with your vision. So now, from last week, I'm going to pick up, why would we go to probate? Well, we go to probate when we have an asset in our personal name, so it's not a joint account and there's no beneficiary on it. Again, the most easily understood asset is a house. If I was single, I don't have anyone else on title with me on my house. I pass away. There's no beneficiary designation on my house. So therefore, How does somebody legally sign for me to sell my home after I die? Well, that ends up being called a personal representative. We have to go to court to get that person legally empowered. Mm. So that's why we end up in the probate process. We end up there because we might have minor children when we pass away, and we may need a new guardian over them. We get to probate because I died in an accident and my estate needs to sue somebody, or if it was my fault, we need to defend a lawsuit to someone I might have harmed at my death. We end up in probate because of an asset that's only titled in my name. So there's many, many ways we get to a probate process. But the most common is that I don't have any plan at all, or I use a will and I have an asset in my name. With a revocable living trust, because a trust does not die, even though I, who have created the trust, have died, my trust does not. So therefore, we call a successor trustee. They can come in, take control of the trust, and when the trust holds all the assets, then that new successor trustee manages all the assets by law, and now we have good, clear instructions given to that new successor trustee on what to do. In other words, who do we want to bless? Is it our children? Is it charities? Is it nieces and nephews if we don't have kids? Is it friends and family? So whatever the instructions say, the trust now has been the guardian of all the assets. And here's another thing about a trust that I think is really important, which is during our lifetime, we're going to change our mind to something. Let's say that I am giving a certain percentage to a ministry, and that ministry is either no longer in existence. Unfortunately, we've seen many ministries change their objectives, and maybe that objective now is not in alignment with what you want. And so now you want to change that specific ministry and exchange it for another one, or fully remove them. The nice thing about utilizing a trust instrument is that you just have to go back to the trust instrument itself, change the instructions, and because all the assets are in it, all of the assets again conform to those instructions. If I used a will, I would have to go to my bank account, my investment account, my retirement accounts. I'd have to find a way to change my will. And all of a sudden, I have to touch almost every single asset in my life plus my estate plan to make that adjustment. Or I just change my will, not understanding that a beneficiary designation is going to usurp that, and then the ministry actually gets nothing. So when we use a revocable living trust, we change the document and all the assets then fall in line with that one change. We don't have to go asset by asset. We get to go to one document and manage the document, and the document then manages all the assets, and our entire estate stays in line with our current vision, because life changes, our vision changes. Sometimes our values change, not necessarily our morals, but our values, what we call important, how we view this world, how we view our kids' ability as they mature and as they grow up. These are things that we would want to change through a continued lifespan. So we need to have a document that is easily changeable. And I propose that that is a revocable living trust versus a will, and definitely better than no plan at all.
What happens when we die? How to avoid probate? The current aspect of this discussion we're into, we'll continue in just a moment. You like the way Paul looks at this idea of planning and purpose? Planning with Purpose is the name of his company. And how do people find out more about your services, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at probate, how to avoid it in our planning, because we are all going to die, and we need to have a good plan in place. And you wanted to continue this look at how to avoid probate, Paul.
Yeah, I talked about a revocable living trust, so maybe the next question is, well, is there any other way to avoid probate? And the answer is yes.
Okay.
There can be. But I just, you know, when going into break, I made this point, and in my brain, it's very valid, so I'm going to repeat it, which is, when using a revocable living trust and you have a change, you can go to the document, change the one document, and all the assets fall in line. So what's another way to avoid probate? Well, another way to avoid probate is to make sure that all of your assets are either jointly owned or they have a beneficiary designation. The most difficult one, the most difficult asset we own, that's what I wanted to say. My brain catches up sometimes. Is a house, is real estate. But Washington State does have a thing called a beneficiary deed. So there is a way to avoid probate. So what it would take then is to make sure that all of your assets have a beneficiary designation on it. So let's say we have two children. I don't know how many children people have on average anymore. It used to be like 2.2 or something like that. But we'll just say two. So two children. So if your intent was to only leave those two children everything you have, then it's a little more simplistic. Now, if you wanted to work in charities, you go to a great church and you wanted to give them a gift at your passing, or you support missionaries, or you support other nonprofits, the Salvation Army, or any other great work that's going on that helps public interests, then we need to include that not in your will, but on each asset or on a specific asset. So you can give, like, for example, some of your retirement assets to a nonprofit. That would be a great thing, actually, because nonprofits would take that retirement fund when you pass away, and they don't pay tax on it compared to where beneficiaries, they have to unwind it and they have to pay the tax. So oftentimes, some people would think through utilizing a retirement asset as a way to give to charity upon their passing. So you could kind of follow the value of your retirement fund and make a specific percentage of that specific asset to go to charity. And then every other asset could just go to your kids, as an example. Now, you have to stay on top of that because nothing is stagnant. You need to use some of your retirement fund specifically. If you're in your 70s, you have required minimum distributions. So therefore, you have to take some of that IRA by IRS law. You have to pay some of those taxes. So and then the market, maybe it goes up. It's been a good market. Maybe it goes down in a poor market. So therefore, the value constantly changes. And what if you have a health emergency and you have to use more of that asset? All of a sudden, maybe the full vision of what you were hoping to get to the charity or to other individuals is not going to take place because, well, if you're having health incidences. You may not be able to change the beneficiary designations. We may not be able to get your signature. You may be having memory problems. We may never be able to change it again. So there's all these concerns wrapped around that I would personally have in looking at managing each asset by asset, and trying to stay on top of your beneficiary designations. It actually takes far more work instead of just making the investment in a revocable living trust. Because, look, there's a cost difference between using a will and then kind of managing those beneficiary designations on your own versus the cost of actually creating a revocable living trust. So they are more expensive. So it is can be a one-time cost, but oftentimes that's the right decision because it's easier to manage during lifetime, and we make sure that that one document can manage all of your assets and get to your family in the way you see fit, or to other beneficiaries. Mm. So we can align your estate with beneficiaries. We can put a beneficiary deed on your house. Now everything at your passing is going to go by beneficiary designation. Now, again, it takes some work, but that's doable. We could also add a joint owner. I am very against adding children to your bank accounts. I'm even more against adding children to your house because I think that there are risks that are not talked about a lot. I'll tell you a brief story. At the very beginning of my career, I was walking down the hallway of a court and I overheard a conversation. And it went something like this. The elderly woman said, "But it was my money." And the attorney's response was, "Yes, but you put your daughter on the account." So I don't know the whole story. I listened long enough to kind of get the snippets. She then said, "But that, you know, it's just my Social Security money." So obviously it was really a difficult situation. They were in court and the attorney was trying to help his client get that money back from the creditor. But here's the problem. She put her daughter on the bank account. So in other words, she tried to do what she thought was going to be good for estate planning and or assisting her should she not be able to write checks or manage her own money instead of actually investing in a good plan, because it is an investment. It's an investment in yourself first. My job is to take care of my clients first. So this is an investment in yourself to make sure that you're never in that situation. So clearly the daughter in my story had some sort of financial problems. It didn't sound like she was stealing from mom. What it sounds like is
Creditors came after her and found out she has this account, bank account.
That's right. And they don't care whose name is on it. Mm-hmm. They're just going to go after the account, which they did, and they were successful, therefore leaving mom high and dry. So now you may go, "Oh, that sounds like a really fantastic story." Well, this is a real story. Mm-hmm. But true stories are always better than ones that are just made up. So I have concerns with doing that. If we bring children onto a house, I've seen that multiple times. Well, there's a tax disadvantage to that. So therefore, you are going to have a tax on the home when the children sell it down the road, because they take that as a gift, which means they take it with your basis. Versus when you pass away, if you are the only owner, the basis steps up. So in other words, it's whatever the market is at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And they could actually sell that and have minimal to zero taxes at the time of that you've passed. So there's multiple concerns with using joint ownership with other people, not to mention that you put one child on instead of all of them, they become the legal owner. Now, maybe they have a moral duty and a moral obligation to put out those funds. Well, number one, they don't have to. Number two, they may come into gifting tax issues because they're exceeding the threshold of giving money to their siblings. There's multiple layers of why I don't like other non-probated ways to do an estate plan. And how do you do it? You do a will. You do beneficiary designations. You do joint ownership. I think that there are unfortunate flaws with designing a plan that way. In my opinion, it is far superior to use the revocable living trust for most individuals. I'm not saying for all. I'm just saying for most. And so, but how do we find out which is best for you? Well, head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's ways to communicate with us. We'd love to assist you. But until I were to sit down with you, understand what your vision is, understand what your finances are, and then help design a specific plan for you, then I'm at a loss. Or get to an attorney that you can trust. It is better to have a strong plan than no plan, or a plan that takes shortcuts because there's potential pitfalls that I just don't want you to walk into when at the time it's most inconvenient. So there's kind of our lesson for today.
Okay. Head to his company, Planning with Purpose. Again, legacyandfaith.com. What happens when we die? We will continue this discussion next time. This has been the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.